Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. For today's Walnut Wednesday, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack announced a new grant program that will provide assistance for farm and food workers impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. We have more on that in segment three for today's Walnut Wednesday feature. But we start today with another issue top of mind for Californians specifically this week. The California Farm Bureau is asking farmers and others to join them in front of the Capitol building tomorrow morning, September 9th, at 11 a.m. to protest Assembly Bill 616. Now, that bill would change how union elections are handled. I talked recently with Alyssa Houtby, the Director of Government Affairs at the California Citrus Mutual. Here's what she had to say about the bill.
So the legislature is winding down for the year. We're in the final weeks of the legislative session, and one of the biggest bills that we're working on right now is AB 616. It's commonly referred to as card check. We've seen this issue come up a number of times in the past decade, if not longer. It's an attempt by union organizers to eliminate the secret ballot system for establishing a union representation and replacing it with what we call card check, which is a simple postcard that employee can sign if they want to be represented by a union. And in the case of AB 616, it would actually be the labor union that would facilitate that card check ballot. They would select the employees that they want to sign the ballots. And instead of an actual ballot like we're used to seeing with our own mail-in ballots for statewide elections, The ballot would be simply a checkoff of a yes, I want to be unionized, and then the employee's signature, and that's it. There would be no oversight by the Agriculture Labor Relations Board as there currently is. There would be no secrecy, no protections against undue influence or intimidation. Really, it completely undermines the foundational system of establishing a union in a way that protects employees from undue influence and really honors that secret ballot process. Card check is not equivalent to a mail-in ballot, like some proponents would argue. It really just it undermines all those protections for employees. And so AB 616 is one of those bills that we're really working on hard to kill in the final weeks of session. And we do encourage agricultural employers to communicate to their state senator about the concerns they have with this bill, because the bill is up for a vote in the state Senate in the coming weeks, if not days. It's eligible to be voted on right now, actually.
So I have all kinds of questions about this, but I don't know how political we want to get, so I'll keep some of them to myself.
Okay.
But it sounds really interesting that this bill even has made it this far, given how much it would change that fair election process for ag laborers.
Yeah, like I said, this concept of a card check system has been brought up in legislation a number of times over the years. It's been vetoed in the past by Governor Schwarzenegger and by Governor Brown for the very reason that it undermines a really well-established and fair election process. I think the reason it's made it this far in the current legislative session is because it's being unfairly likened to a mail-in ballot, which is what is, something that we're all familiar with as voters. We get our ballot in the mail and we have our options, our selection of options, and we make our selection and we sign our ballot and we send it back. It's administered by the Secretary of State. We can reasonably assume it's being handled with care and all caution. Our vote is our vote. AB 616 is being likened to a system that's implemented by the Secretary of State, but in fact, it's not at all like a mail-in ballot. Like I said, the union would be administering these postcards. It wouldn't be an actual ballot with options of yes, no, I want to be unionized. It's literally a checkoff and a signature line, and the union would be handing out those ballot cards, would be overseeing people signing those cards, and they would get to choose which employees have the option to vote instead of giving every employee the option to vote. And so simply presenting a number of cards to the Agriculture Relations Board that is at least 50% of the total workforce would be sufficient to establish a union representation. It really does take away all fairness and protections in the election process. But it's just been unfairly characterized or inaccurately characterized as a mail-in ballot or a, you know, modernization of an election system. And that's just not the case. There's ways to go about doing a mail-in ballot for union representation, and AB 616 is not the way to do it.
Right. And that's what I was going to say too, is that there, you know, if there needs to be improvements, I'm sure there are very good ways to make some solid improvements. It sounds like this might be somewhat questionable, especially when they get to choose who gets to vote. That's the part that really stuck with me, is they get to decide.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as the case is with legislation, the devil's in the details, and it's easy to make assumptions and read over the summary, but not really dive into those details and ask the hard questions of, you know, what is there a problem that we're trying to fix, or, you know, are there ulterior motives here? And I would argue that there are ulterior motives for the card check system. It's just a way to more easily unionize people without going through that due process.
Sure. And it really is about due process too. We're not saying that people shouldn't have the right to unionize or anything like that, but it's about making the process appropriate.
Absolutely. We firmly believe that every person has the right to vote whether or not to be unionized. That's in law. They have that, people, everyone, we have that right. AB 616 takes that right away. It really does.
So what can be done about that? You mentioned contact your representatives.
Yeah, so the bill is on the Senate floor right now. It's eligible to be voted on. So we really encourage people to contact their state senator, let them know that they're concerned about the bills or about the bill. And then hopefully our state senators will vote, you know, against the bill, and we won't have to send it to the governor's desk, and it will just stop in the Senate.
Again, the Farm Bureau is gathering at 11 a.m. tomorrow, September 9th, at the front of the Capitol building. Our news brief is up next. We will be right back.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns live in person on September 16th and 17th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this must-attend conference features 2 days of educational seminars, a live trade show, and honorariums and scholarships given by Western CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Hear the top experts in their field speak on pest management, artificial intelligence and new technologies, as well as the latest on soil health, nitrogen, and irrigation management. DPR and CCA credits will be available over the 2 days. More information on credits, topics, and registration, visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
Don't let your soils become tainted and unproductive from excess salts. Take care of your crops while caring for your soil. Cation X5 Plus by AgroPlanté is a soil conditioner meant to maximize water penetration by combating harmful salts in the soil, which can injure your crops and bottom line. Cation X5 Plus also corrects sulfur and calcium plant deficiencies. AgroPlanté wants to help you grow your crop. Contact us today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at www.agroplanté.com.
AgroMayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, AgroMiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, AgroMiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Here's our news for today. The monthly Ag Economy Barometer rose 4 points in August to 138. Announced Tuesday, the modest rise was primarily attributed to an improvement in the Current Conditions Index, which climbed 9 points to 152. The Index of Future Expectations rose just 2 points to 132. Although the barometer and its two key sub-indices improved in August compared to July, all three remain well below readings posted this past spring. The barometer follows last week's USDA report that farm net income and expenses are rising. Gary Crawford has more on that.
The Agriculture Department is forecasting net farm income this year to be the highest since 2013, net cash income the highest since 2014. And remember back then,
we were kind of in that boom period there in terms of very strong farm income.
USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer. So are we now yet in another boom time for agriculture? Boom, yes. Meyer says he's not ready to use the B word just yet. He says, yes, farm income looks really good overall.
But I also think when you look region by region, it is really the Midwest that is seeing the primary benefits. And that's because when we look at things that are contributing to cash receipts, it's being led by things like corn, soybeans, hog cash receipts. And those aren't widely geographically spread.
In other words,
this rising ship of cash receipts isn't floating all the boats.
And indeed, drought-stricken Western producers certainly would not call this a boom time for them. But Meyer says if you are producing corn, beans, and hogs,
it's going to be a pretty darn good year.
Even though farmers everywhere are also looking at a substantial hike in production expenses, in fact.
There are very few things where production expenses are actually lower in 2021.
Yes, Seth Meyer told us.
It's basically production expenses across the board, things like feed and livestock purchases. But when you really look at it, most things we've seen an increase, and that includes things like interest expenses, labor expenses, rent, fertilizer, seeds, fuels, and oils.
The only major production items that are expected to end up costing less this year are pesticides. And USDA is forecasting overall farm production costs in 2021 to top last year by over 7%. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Farmers and ranchers are voicing their concerns to Washington, D.C. on the top issues facing them. Michael Clement shares more with Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall.
Traveling the countryside, American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall is hearing from farmers and ranchers about the top issues facing their operations. Duvall says farmers and ranchers have concerns regarding the proposed changes in stepped-up basis.
They're very concerned about the conversation that's being had around taxes and how we will move forward on the stepped-up basis. They have contacted their congressmen and senators. So we've had tremendous support, even to the point that we've had some congressmen and senators write letters from both sides of the aisle to leadership and to the president about how important it was not to change stepped up basis and how important it was to us to be able to continue to pass our family farms on to the next generation.
He says farmers and ranchers are also telling the Environmental Protection Agency what they need from the Waters of the U.S. rule rewrite effort.
EPA's been holding listening sessions about rewriting the rule and taking comments, and we're very proud that about 75% of them sessions were farmers and ranchers that volunteered. I think that was a great showing. So we're real proud of the way agriculture stepped up to let EPA know that we want clean water, but we also have to have clear rules.
Duvall says farmers and ranchers need to be engaged in these issues.
I know our farmers and ranchers are busy, but I'm telling you, we need to make sure that our farmers and ranchers be engaged on what's going on in Washington, D.C. We encourage them to be part of an organization like Farm Bureau, and alongside of Farm Bureau, be part of their commodity organization so that we can work in tandem, working for the same outcome. If you're not part of an organization, you might be like that lone wolf howling in the night. You join up with an organization like ours, we put together a pack of voices that cannot be ignored.
Learn more at FB.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
Software and technology provider BarChart released its monthly yield and production forecast Tuesday for U.S. and Canadian field crops. The September report indicates an increase in U.S. crop production for corn, soybean, and hard red winter wheat, while Canadian production forecasts show a decrease for spring wheat and soybeans. Bar chart expects U.S. corn production at 15.4 billion bushels with an average yield of 183.6 bushels per acre. That's higher than the latest USDA figures of 14.8 billion bushels with an average yield of 174.6. A recent USDA study has both honeybee colony movement patterns as well as economic impacts for such transport. Rod Bain reports.
It originated many years ago when USDA's Economic Research Service was asked
to do a congressional report on the value of honeybees to the U.S. economy.
A study that researcher Jennifer Bond said developed over time to include not only routes of pollinator services to the fields and orchards at MAC, but also National Agricultural Statistics Service data.
They had a couple new surveys come out, including one on colony loss, the cost of pollination services, and then they have their annual honey inquiry.
The combining of this information and Census of Agriculture data resulted in the recently released report, Honeybees on the Move. Among the findings, no surprise, the routes taken by honeybee colonies were seasonal, with much of that travel driven by the provision of pollinator services. Yet Bond says what was surprising to learn was pollinator services' economic impacts.
From an economic perspective, that was valued between $250 to $320 million annually. So a pretty significant share of revenue for beekeepers. And for comparison's sake, they make about the same from the provision of honey. And so pollination services are an important part of the economic balance for beekeepers.
She adds beekeepers also move hives around to forage and produce honey, in part to enhance colony survival and facilitate pollinator service contracts.
Movements of these hives around the country really highlighted the link for us between the production of pollinated nuts, fruits, vegetables, and seeds, most especially in California, where almonds are really important, and access to the forage resources in the Great Northern Plains in particular, and possibly too to acreage enrolled in the Conservation Reserve Program.
Specific findings include 30% of all commercial U.S. honeybee hives transported to the Northern Plains from other states at the conclusion of the pollination season.
When the weather turns colder, the hives are generally moved out of the Great Northern Plains and into warmer states in preparation for the almond bloom. So there really is truly a seasonal flow.
Another finding,
the intensity of use of pollination services really varies by crop, and not only by crop, so not just between almonds, apples, and pears, but also by crop in different regions. So the intensity of use of pollination services in Maine, for example, to produce blueberries may vary considerably from the intensity of use that we found to produce blueberries in, say, Oregon.
Bond also points out that while almonds are the nation's seventh most valuable crop,
we found almonds were incredibly important to the seasonal commuting patterns of hives. And 80% of pollination service payments in the year that we studied were derived from the pollination of almonds. So it's incredibly important.
And Conservation Reserve Program land in the Northern Plains and its forage are highly suitable for pollinators. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
That's our news for today. We will be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow.
Welcome back. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack Tuesday announced $700 million in pandemic grant funding for farm and food workers. That's the focus of today's Walnut Wednesday.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board.
Vilsack says farm and food worker relief funds will be distributed through the grants of $5 million to $50 million to state agencies, as well as tribal entities and nonprofits that help farm and meatpacking workers. He made the announcement Tuesday on a media call that we were on. Here are his comments.
I can't think of a more appropriate time to make an announcement of this kind than the week that we celebrate our nation's Labor Day. This obviously is the second Labor Day that we've had during the pandemic, and USDA gives us an opportunity to focus on those who work every single day to provide the food and fiber that we enjoy in this country. We especially think today of our farm workers, our meatpacker workers, and our grocery store workers who have already done an incredible job during a very difficult time during the pandemic. And they've done so oftentimes in taking a fairly significant personal risk to ensure that the rest of us can feed our families with wholesome and safe food. I think it's important that we recognize that doing this essential work has also come not only at a potential physical risk, but also at a financial risk. Many of these workers have had to, out of their own pocket, pay for masks or personal protective equipment during the course of this pandemic. Some have had to take unpaid medical leave, whether it was to get vaccinated, whether it was to quarantine after coming in contact with somebody who had the virus, or perhaps it was because either a family member or themselves actually got sick. So while it's important for us to give recognition to these incredibly hard workers, I think it's also important for us to provide some level of support, which is why today the Biden administration is announcing a new grant program that will provide up to $600 in relief payments directly to frontline farm workers, meatpacker workers, and food workers. Let me give you some background on how this is going to work. State agencies, tribal entities, and nonprofit organizations with a 501c3 status will be eligible to apply for this program. Now, this will include nonprofit foundations that are affiliated with a union or labor organization as well. To be eligible for the program, applicants must demonstrate experience in providing services to low-income migrant and seasonal farm workers, meatpacker workers, and frontline grocery workers. Examples of providing support could include, but not necessarily be limited to, entities that were providing personal protective equipment, such as masks, to ag and food workers, or perhaps entities that were hosting a vaccine clinic or an outreach campaign to encourage vaccination, or perhaps an entity that was providing financial support during COVID-19. Applicants, in addition to being able to establish that they've have experience in providing support services, also have to be able to establish that they have the capacity to do outreach and technical assistance to get the word out to farm workers, meatpacker workers, and frontline grocery workers of the existence of this program, and that they're able, obviously, to control these resources in a way that provides for efficient disbursement to eligible beneficiaries. Now, we expect and anticipate the publication of the request for application to take place in the early fall, in the next couple of weeks. We'll also be engaging one or more cooperative agreements to supporting entities that will help us with networking across organizations to ensure organizations of all sizes can partner and apply for and ultimately distribute these funds to these essential workers. We're obviously going to continue to encourage partnerships with large and small organizations so long as there are some ability on the part of these organizations to get to hard to reach worker populations. This is not necessarily going to be able to be the easiest thing in terms of getting to some of this relief to folks who live remotely, for example. Our AMS team will host grant webinars. We'll work with stakeholder organizations to help applicants navigate the application process. We'll try to make it as easy as possible. And obviously make sure that we provide information on best practices for the greatest chance of this project being successful. There will be a peer review at the end of it, an internal administrative review as well. We expect that it will take a number of months to ensure that all grant recipients have sufficient time to reach as many workers as possible. It could take up to a year or two for all this resource to be ultimately distributed. But we wanted to make sure that we got this announcement out and began the process of getting people prepared for it. This announcement is being made today, and we expect and anticipate to be making another announcement for a separate $700 million suite of pandemic safety and response grants directed at producers, processors, farmers markets, distributors, and seafood processors in the very, very near term. So with that, I want to turn it over to Diane Tellison-Torres, who, as Kate indicated, is the Vice President and Executive Director of the United Farm Workers Foundation. Diana.
Thank you, Sir Secretary Vilsack. It's wonderful to be here today during such an important occasion. I'm the Executive Director of the UFW Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization that serves farm workers and immigrants in the nation's leading agricultural areas. And long before COVID-19 struck, we knew that occupational risk, combined with the isolated nature of agricultural work, a lack of legal status, and a shameful history of excluding the industry from basic labor laws, makes farm workers among the most vulnerable employees in America. And I'm talking about work that's characterized by difficult, repetitive tasks, often in uncomfortable positions to cultivate and harvest our food. Other dangerous conditions include handling heavy machinery and working with large animals, as is the case with the livestock and dairy industry. And farm work also involves exposure to pesticides and extreme weather, the dangers of which are only exacerbated by climate change. And for context, compared to all other civilian occupations, crop workers are 30 times more likely to die due to heat-related causes. And the majority of these deaths are among immigrant workers. As the nation went into lockdown and many Americans sheltered in place and performed remote work, farm workers who are officially classified as essential by federal, state, and local governments showed up to work. And even under a deadly pandemic and as life-threatening heat waves and toxic wildfire smoke kept the public indoors and in climate-controlled spaces, farm workers continued to show up to work. Farm workers are the first responders that safeguard the harvest, a job they perform with utmost urgency and dignity to feed their loved ones and sustain the nation's food security. And many struggled with the irony in the essential worker designation, wondering how they could be essential yet subject to removal from this country and ineligible for support during this pandemic, even though they are low-wage workers. They feed us, yet at the national level, a farm worker's mean and median personal income ranges between $20,000 to $24,999 per year. The result of this commitment has meant that farm workers were also on the front lines of exposure to a deadly virus, facing higher rates of infection than workers in other industrial sectors, due in part to housing, transportation, and working conditions that prevented physical distancing. And estimates suggest that to date, more than 936,000 farm workers and farmers are likely to have contracted COVID-19. They have gotten COVID-19 and died at higher rates than other populations. And in fact, a February survey conducted by the UFW Foundation of over 10,000 farm workers showed that 47% of respondents had been tested for COVID-19. And out of those who'd been tested, an astounding 46% responded that they'd tested positive. Our call center fielded calls from farm worker families who were at hospitals with loved ones trying to hang on to their lives and hoping that we could help with financial assistance, given the economic devastation of the illness. And to this day, farm workers continue to inform our outreach staff in states like California, Washington, Michigan, Georgia, and Arizona that many of their employers did not provide them with sick pay when they were ill, nor personal protective equipment. The lack of childcare has been an even bigger dilemma during COVID, and ensuring distance learning for their children was challenging as farm workers went to work and children lacked the regular nutrition they received during school, as well as the technology and access to broadband to access virtual education. Food insecurity grew as the price of food items increased, and there was insecurity about whether farm workers would get in trouble for going to work during shelter-in-place orders. And when they reached their destination, farm workers feared the extent to which the virus would threaten their safety on the job and their ability to stay alive. Farm workers faced the impossible choice of risking their lives to sustain their own families and feed the nation nonetheless. Whether they were not documented or undocumented, they showed up to work in farms, ranches, nurseries, or greenhouses. And in response to this crisis, the UFW Foundation to date has coordinated food distributions, provided safety net services, over 1 million masks, vaccines, and over $21 million in cash assistance and critical information to farm workers. And our work is not over. As we celebrate Labor Day this week, let us not forget the sacrifices that farm workers continue to make as essential workers in order to keep our food supply intact and during the pandemic and beyond. And as we honor the contributions of workers across our nation, let's show gratitude to the men and women who feed America and the world. The UFW Foundation worked tirelessly to advance legislation that would empower the USDA to support farm workers throughout this pandemic. And we applaud the Biden-Harris administration, Secretary Vilsack, and USDA for recognizing the vital role of farm workers in the nation's food security and economy through this new program. The work's not done until this much needed pandemic relief reaches farm workers across the nation. And we look forward to working with USDA to that end. And I'd like to just make some very brief comments in Spanish. Al celebrar el Día del Trabajo esta semana, no olvidemos los sacrificios que los trabajadores agrícolas continúan haciendo como trabajadores esenciales para mantener intacto nuestro suministro de alimentos durante la pandemia. Y mientras honramos las contribuciones de los trabajadores en toda nuestra nación, mostremos gratitud a los hombres y mujeres que alimentan a los Estados Unidos y al mundo. La Fundación UFW trabajó incansablemente para abogar por legislación que facultaría al Departamento de Agricultura de los Estados Unidos para apoyar a los trabajadores agrícolas durante esta pandemia. Y aplaudimos a la administración Biden-Harris, al secretario Vilsack y al USDA por reconocer el papel vital de los trabajadores agrícolas en la seguridad alimentaria y la economía de la nación a través de este nuevo programa. El trabajo no se terminará hasta que este tan necesario alivio pandémico llegue a los trabajadores agrícolas de todo el país, y esperamos trabajar con el USDA con ese fin. Muchas gracias. Thank you so much.
We have more right after this.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
We continue now with the media call with Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Thank you very much. And now let me turn the microphone over to Mark Perrone, who was indicated and identified as the president of the National UFCW. Mark?
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. America's meatpacking and grocery workers have been on the front line since this pandemic began, risking their health and safety every day to keep our food supply secure during this crisis. And while the rest of America could work from home, these brave men and women continue to show up for work every single day to ensure that we all had food on our tables that we could eat. Meatpacking plants experienced some of the most deadly COVID-19 outbreaks when the pandemic first came around, and there were workers that are deserving of our help and our thanks and our support. Across the country, meatpacking workers have had to use their own money to pay for personal protective equipment to stay safe on the job, shoulder the burden of increased child care costs, take on expenses from COVID-19 testing and quarantining, and so much more. Grocery workers also had to continue to face health crisis during this COVID-19 Delta outbreak. They've had to step up every day to help keep the stores open and safe and to ensure that our families can also put food on our table and make it accessible to all of us. Since the pandemic began, the UFCW has tracked the devastating impact of COVID it's had on our country's food, our essential food workers. Among our members nationwide, there have been more than 484 frontline worker deaths and 98,300 frontline workers infected or exposed to the virus. Essential food workers have been especially hard hit. We've now had 198 grocery worker deaths and 44,000 grocery workers who've been infected or exposed. Additionally, we've had 132 meatpacking worker deaths with 22,000 meatpacking workers that have been infected. The good news is that frontline workers with UFCW are standing up to secure hard-earned pay increases and benefit increases. This past week, we were able to announce the first ever national paid leave policy for American meatpacking workers as a part of the historic deal with Tyson's Food on the company's vaccine mandate. With many meatpacking workers and other companies, they're still going to need help, though. And I want to thank you for what you've done for us. But much more must be done in support of all meatpacking and grocery workers nationwide. This new grant program builds on that progress. And recognizes the incredible service and sacrifices these men and women by providing a critical financial support that they need. Meatpacking workers and farm workers, two of the critical groups to the economic strength of rural America, and it's vital to keep our food supply secure and open. Now we'll have access to the essential financial support that they need thanks to this historic investment. Again, Mr. Secretary, I want to personally thank you for launching the pilot program to support food workers. This is a strong step towards providing them with the assistance that they and their families need as they continue to serve our communities in supermarkets nationwide and meatpacking plants despite the ongoing COVID health risks that they face. You know, we represent 1.3 million essential workers on the front lines, and we applaud the Biden administration and you for investing in these critical programs as health risk and financial burdens continue for so many. Congress must join the Biden administration in this effort and support America's essential food workers by providing even more funding to invest in these critical programs to provide relief for those on the front lines and meatpacking and grocery stores across this country. America's frontline workers and their families have sacrificed so much during this pandemic, and they're counting on our nation's leaders to act. The UFCW is going to be sending a clear and forceful message to Congress that we must immediately get to work to strengthen the funding of these programs and ensure that all these workers have the support that they need. And now more than ever, our country must support the brave men and women in meatpacking grocery stores, as well as our farm workers, to help keep our food supply chain strong as this pandemic continues into the future. So thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Again, Vilsack says USDA will soon announce a separate $700 million in pandemic grants for producers, processors, farmers markets, and distributors. That's our show for today. If there's something you'd like to hear more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.